You may be in possession of a batter-stained, dog-eared copy of How to Cook Everything by Mark Bittman. Well, this month you can get a reboot of this Bible of the Kitchen, a special 20th anniversary upgrade of How to Cook Everything, this time with charts and pictures. So that's how you prepare shrimp, or DP a pod, or bone a chicken breast. Look at the list of things you can toss into pasta, and how great. A focus on sustainability and flexibility, which of course means... well, we're not quite sure. So let's ask Mark Bittman. He wrote for decades about food for the New York Times, became the first food-focused op-ed columnist. His 2007 TED Talk has had more than 4 million views. He's currently teaching at Columbia and joins us from NPR's New York studios. Mark, welcome back.
Great to be here, Robin.
Well, you know, when this first happened in the 1990s, people made fun of you. You know, like, how to cook everything, that's impossible. But, you know, oh, here's a picture, I'll just open anywhere. Here's an outline of a pig with the major cuts of pork. Here's, turning the page, 21 main course bean dishes, the basics of tofu. Turn another page. Here's breaded and fried eggplant or any vegetable. Give us some overarching tenets about cooking simply and sustainably.
Well, the simple thing, you know, of the things you just read, I think about that eggplant headline, which mm-hmm. is how to cook breaded eggplant or any vegetable. And the fact is, once you can bread and fry any vegetable, you can basically bread and fry all vegetables. I mean, you might need a little tweaking here and there, and we offer that. But it's not like you need to relearn each individual food and each individual technique every time you cook. That once you have the fundamentals down, everything else is kind of a variation. So that's flexibility. And I like to think over the years I've learned how to better and better transmit that information about how simple cooking is and how the way to cook is to go find good ingredients and not screw them up and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Sustainability is not something we really talked about 20 years ago,
right,
and certainly not 40, 50 years ago. But now it's obviously an issue. And when you talk about meat eating, for example, it's not just a question of is meat good for you? It's a question of should you be eating as much meat as most Americans do? And the answer is no. So I've tried to adjust my personal cooking and then the way that I talk about and write about cooking to that notion.
The Boston Globe quotes you as saying that back in the 90s, you thought, hey, I'll be successful if I can convince Americans to eat rice and beans once a week. And now that's like many people are. Do me a favor. Let's say I've got rice. Let's say I've got a can of beans. I don't have time to soak, so I've got a can of black beans. How do I take those two things and make it exciting?
By the way, soaking's not necessary, but you should get a pressure cooker.
Okay.
I almost literally eat whole grains and legumes for lunch every day, and they're never the same. You know, beans can kind of be as simple as sort of soupy black beans with cumin and garlic, maybe a little chopped onion, South American, Caribbean style, or you can do dal with an elaborate spice mix and maybe some mustard seeds fried in oil at the end. And often I do things that are as simple as beans with garlic and rosemary, lemon and olive oil. You think of a culture, everybody cooks legumes. Legumes are the most important protein source in the world. Honestly, you could probably do 1,000 variations on basic bean recipes. I don't do that. I think there are 20, but that's plenty.
Well, there's almost 1,000 pages in the book, and I just flipped open to 456, and here we are. 16 dishes to serve over couscous, sautéed eggplant with basil, winter squash curry, chickpeas in their own broth, lentils. Here's 8 ways to enhance cooked grains. Just tender cooked vegetables, peas, chopped greens, a couple of spoonfuls of a simple sauce, any flavored oil, compound butter, a vinaigrette. You just pour these ideas out. Dried fruit, you know, put them in your grains. Add sautéed mushrooms. So it's about, you know, having the grains, having the legumes, and then just playing with it a little bit.
Well, pantry is important for sure because half the things you mentioned keep forever. The three things that go into it are knowing what to do, having the stuff on hand And then shopping for something fresh and wonderful. The key is really getting good ingredients and not screwing them up.
So pantry's important. Maybe.
Don't do it.
Yeah,
don't
do it. Five things. Five things to have in the pantry.
I was going to say don't put a number on it.
Okay.
I mean, when you start cooking, you need some equipment and you need some stuff in the pantry. I mean, you need olive oil. You need soy sauce. You need vinegar. You need garlic. You need those kinds of things on hand all the time. But since many of those things keep more or less forever, or let's say keep for a year, as you need them, you accumulate them. So you can have 5 or 10 different kinds of dried beans in the pantry at the same time and the same number of grains. And you can have anchovies and capers and dried shrimp and
tuna.
Bonito flakes, right, and tuna. And all of those things because they just keep. And then you have the option.
You also talk about flexibility. I think you have just spoken of flexibility, but is that what you mean, just being able to have a few things on hand to be flexible?
I mean, there's a joke that some old food writer friends and I have that there are really only 10 recipes in the world. And in a way, it's true. You know, going back to that eggplant example, if you can fry something, you can pretty much fry anything. If you can roast something, you know, once you get these basics down, once you learn how to judge doneness, it's all just kind of playing with the possibilities. My job is to just show people how to do the basics and then give them ideas for the possibilities.
Yeah. I mentioned having a can of tuna on hand. You know, my mother used to throw it in with noodles and suddenly you had a casserole. And something happened along the way where that wasn't good enough. Is that part of what you're saying?
No, because I'm not really a fan of tuna noodle casserole. You know, I think legitimate dishes you can make with a can of tuna. I think 1950s tuna noodle casserole is not among them, but other people disagree with
me. Not so. You don't prefer a can of mushroom soup and potato chips on
cream
the top?
Of mushroom soup. Oh, well, that's a good,
there you go.
Or crushed corn checks.
I guess what I'm saying is that it got away from just mixing things up in a pot and thinking that you had to do something more extravagant.
I'm going to disagree with you here because when you're mixing canned tuna and cream of mushroom soup and potato chips, for example, you're mixing some things that contain other things, especially the cream of mushroom soup, that you don't really want to be eating to begin with. When you take a piece of fish and stick it under the broiler with olive oil and put lemon on it, you have three ingredients.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely in favor of the latter.
You say that we don't talk enough about food and you compare it to the economy and things like that. But it feels like we always talk about food. Are we not talking about food in the right way?
Well, I think we're starting to talk about food in the right way. Food is as important to humans as anything. I mean, that is literally true. You can't say that about too many things. So to talk about our favorite restaurants is not the same thing as to talk about where food comes from and how it's produced. And I think where food comes from and how it's produced is really, really critical. And we are seeing that agriculture has an impact on both climate and also on our diets. We can only eat what we're provided with. We can only eat what's grown. And if what's grown is corn for junk food and for animal feed and for ethanol, well, then we're going to drive cars and eat a lot of junky meat and a lot of junky food. And, you know, there's a better way to do these things. And that should be part of the conversation.
How does it feel to have put this out again?
Do you know, I remember 20 years ago when this book came out. And, of course, I think you talk to many more authors than I do, but I bet they all say similar things, which is that I was convinced this book was going to be a failure. And I was convinced this book was going to be a failure, and lo and behold, it was not. And to have the opportunity to redo it in a way that makes it contemporary, that makes it better, that makes it more relevant – I mean, it's fabulous. I couldn't be happier about it.
Because you've said it's a work of a lifetime to change a bad food habit.
Well, we are doing ourselves a disservice. I mean, I don't want to be too preachy, but, you know, until we start raising kids, appreciating what real food is and appreciating where it comes from and how to put it together, we're not going to have generations of adults that aren't hung up on food. Right now, there isn't a person who isn't listening to this, including you and me, who doesn't know how hard it is to change the way they eat because we've all been raised with substandard food habits. And then we grow up and we say, gee, I should be eating less meat. I should be eating more vegetables. I should be eating more. And it's not that easy to change. All I can do is try to make those things easier.
Vegetables to mash with potatoes. It's a whole chart right here.
Was this your plan, was to like ask hard questions and then read
recipe titles?
Book.
It's so much fun, Mark Bittman. Oh, my God. A whole page. 9 sweet and savory ways to broil and grill fruit. Mark Bittman, again, 6-time James Beard Award winner, author of 20 cookbooks, including the reboot 20th anniversary edition of How to Cook Everything. Mark, what's your favorite? I know you're probably going to say you can't do that, but can you? Is there a favorite recipe in here?
Is there a favorite recipe in there? No. Yeah. I mean, I do rice and beans. I'm telling you, that's the key.
That's
the key to life, rice and beans.
There you have it. The key to life for Mark Bittman, rice and beans. And yet the book is the size of a phone book. Remember those? So it's been 20 years since the original How to Cook Everything came out. Have you changed your eating habits since then? What are some of your new favorites? Are you eating more rice and beans? Let us know. Hereandnow.org.